You're listening to Fan of a Fan, an independently produced podcast for stans by stans. It's your girl KT.
And it's Augie.
Let's get it started.
Let's go. All right, so now we're going to get into talking about our problematic faves, because all your faves are problematic, whether you want to admit it or not. Mm-hmm. So let's kick it off. Kay, who was your problematic fave?
Like you said, who was? Because he's not my fave anymore. But Chris Brown was definitely my problematic fave. We know that he is a lot, you know. Of course, the Rihanna incident and that happening. But, you know, being a young fan, you don't, and domestic violence isn't a huge thing, I guess, in your life, especially if you haven't experienced it personally. You don't really realize how heavy a situation it is until you get a little older. So that was definitely one of the times where I'm like, whoa, Chris Brown is, you know, he's crazy, but I'm still a fan of him. Mm-hmm. And that's when I guess you could say that was the first moment where he was my problematic fave, because I still supported him.
Right.
But then you have him constantly messing up after that. And he has never been able to redeem himself. So it was just, I got to a point where it was just like, well, I can't really look at him like my favorite anymore. Mm-hmm. But there was a time where it was just like, man, I support him through everything. He has such great music.
Right.
And he dances really well, and he's cute sometimes when he's not on the drugs. But when I got older, I'm just like, it's not even worth it at this point. Right. I listen to his music on the radio, and beyond that, whatever. I don't care to follow him on Twitter, Instagram, and things like that. But yeah, I mean, Chris Brown was definitely the one for me.
Can you talk a little bit about what the fandom was kind of going through, you know, after he beat Rihanna and, you know, that whole incident happened?
Yeah, I mean, I was on like MySpace and stuff. That's when that happened. I want to say I was still on MySpace. I hadn't made my way to Twitter yet. And I just remember seeing fans. I wasn't on like message boards and stuff, so I couldn't really see full conversations, of course, but I definitely did see like fans. It wasn't like they were in denial and they felt like he didn't do it, but it was like it was a victim blaming type thing. Mm. Well, what did she do? And well, you know, what did she do to provoke him and things like that? So I definitely saw that from a lot of fans. I saw any fans be like, well, oh, I'm dropping him completely at this very moment.
Right.
I think it took his fans getting older to realize that it was such a, you know, a heinous crime or whatever. Mm-hmm, but mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's what I remember. But when I think about me, my friends, and how we were huge fans of him, and the few people that I talked to on like MySpace and stuff like that, it was more like, well, what does she do? Or kind of like, even if you didn't think of Rihanna as, you know, somebody that provoked him or something like that, you kind of just ignore the situation completely.
Right. And I think that's like what's really interesting about this whole conversation about problematic faves, is that whether it's like in the moment or like in retrospect, you kind of realize that it's not just your fave that was or is problematic. Like, you might have some problematic things as well, or maybe like you did.
Right.
Because for me, my problematic fave has definitely become Taylor Swift. This is pretty well documented on social media, if you follow me on any one of the platforms. I was a huge Taylor Swift stan in high school. You know, went to multiple concerts, like her albums, I would buy them at Target. Mm-hmm. It was intense. Obviously, in the last year or so, like, people's annoyance of Taylor Swift turned into like a full-blown hatred.
Yes.
For, you know, a myriad of reasons. But for me, I mean, I wasn't really a huge fan of 1989, her last album, to begin with. So I think in general, my fandom, like being a fan of hers, it was starting to diminish in general.
Yeah.
But there were just certain instances like within the last year that just made me like think, I don't agree with that. And like, I don't know if I feel comfortable with supporting you. Especially supporting you at a level that I like had been doing for years. Right. So like one example was when she got into that Twitter argument thing with Nicki Minaj leading up to the VMAs last year. Taylor's tweet in that whole conversation, Taylor's tweet about like, oh, Nikki, it's not like you to like pit women against each other.
As a woman.
As a woman. And I'm just like, do you know who you are? She's not a saint and she's not what you think. She's an actress. Whoa. She's better known for the things that she does on the mattress. Whoa. Like, you are Taylor Swift, someone who literally has a lyric that is like, she's better known for the things that she does on the mattress.
Like, come on, girl. That was about Camilla Bell, right?
Yeah, about Camilla Bell, who was dating
Joe Jonas.
Mm-hmm. And Taylor was dating Joe at one point and basically, like, openly slut-shaming this girl. And I just remember, like, and this is another thing, like, thinking back to, like, how your own views were maybe a little problematic and, like, my feminism wasn't very developed at that point. And I remember hearing this lyric, and this was one of the most, I guess you could say, provocative lyrics that Taylor has ever had. It was, like, one of the first ones where it was kind of like, whoa. Like, yeah. This is not the same girl from, like, I don't know, like, Our Song from her first album. And I remember singing along to it and be like, oh, Taylor, like, she got her blah. And, like, thinking back, I'm just like, no, like, that's an issue. Like, she shouldn't be saying those kinds of things, shouldn't be calling a girl out. It was very obvious who this song was about.
Right.
You know, and so, you know, looking back to that was one thing. And then also, you know, her Wildest Dreams video, which was set in, I'm using air quotes here, Africa, not sure where, but basically it had like no people of color, no Africans there. And it was pretty much like glamorizing colonial times. And it was just like, there's no, I don't understand how anyone thought that this was okay, whether it was the director, Taylor, whoever, and they continued to defend it afterwards. Joseph Kahn directed it and he defended it, but you know, it made me really uncomfortable. And it's again one of those things where I'm just like, you know, maybe your messaging, maybe your feminism, maybe who you are as a person is not for me, because I don't really agree with it, and I don't know that I can enjoy your art anymore because it's so connected to who you are as a person.
Exactly.
So it's like, for me, it's like, I'm not necessarily saying, oh, like, death to Taylor Swift, but I just don't think I can be as big of a fan or stan as I was before, simply because of these things about her that have been coming to light, and also just me becoming just more educated and figuring out my own personal views. And I think with her specifically, it was really interesting to grow out of my, you know, fandom for her.
Yeah, and I mean, that's how it was for me with Chris Brown. It was just like, I grew out of that, like, ignorant thinking of, like, he's going to always be right no matter how many times he does things. It's like, he's not innocent.
Right.
I felt like I had to grow up to really acknowledge that, you know? I think the first step, like they say in 12-step programs, is admitting you have a problem.
Admitting that you have a problem. Yeah, right. And it took me a minute to, like, really admit that, because, like, when it's an artist who you kind of held dear for a long time, like, it feels like you're losing someone, like you're losing a friend or something, as weird as that sounds. Like, it's just, it's odd to just be like, I'm gonna completely go cold turkey and, like, stop listening to your music. I'm not gonna watch the films you put out. Sometimes it can be really difficult to, like, come to that realization. And honestly, like, I still struggle with that with some people and artists.
Yeah.
You know? And I think it's a point of being in a fandom or being a stan of someone where you have to, like, look at yourself as well. Mm-hmm. Like, what do I stand for? Like, what can I tolerate? What is a deal breaker for me? And sometimes people just don't want to waste that energy when it comes to pop culture, because this is, like, an area where you just want to enjoy yourself.
Right.
But so when you do have an issue where there is a problematic person involved, it's like, it kind of makes you stop and think, and it can be kind of irritating, but also a chance for you even to grow as a person, which I feel like when people are talking about the issue with problematic fave, they don't always discuss that.
Like, what if I was still, like, calling Chris Brown my boyfriend at this time? Like, what, I mean, like, that would mean I have zero sense, mm-hmm. You know, like, I could not see myself being like that now. I mean, I haven't really been a huge fan of Chris Brown for a few years now. But, like, I just could not see myself being like, oh, my God, I just love him so much right now. Like, that would mean I was still a fool.
But there are definitely people who still they ignore all that stuff.
Right.
Like, they don't care. They're just, like, blindly in support of these people.
Right.
And will defend them. Like, that's the thing. It's, like, sometimes it's, like, blindly supporting and ignoring the issues at hand.
Right.
And then there's other people who will completely flip everything around and act like, right, you know.
Even when they know, like, how this person is.
Right.
It's like, well, I'm just going to find a way to make it, you know, so this person doesn't sound like a bad person when they really are.
And I feel like Swifties, Taylor Swift fans, were doing that for the longest until Kim released the video of the phone call with Kanye.
It's like, you need that proof with people like that.
You really, really do. Like, they just, there was nothing for them to argue anymore. It's just, it's literally in your face.
Then it's like, well, why would she, as a woman, why would she expose her? It's like, well, as a woman, my ass at this point, because she's, you know, she's fake, you know? Like, we heard one story from her, and it was something completely different.
Yeah.
Speaking of Kim, that makes me think of Kanye. Like, he's definitely Kanye, a lot of people's problematic fave. I would definitely call him my current problematic fave, and I just really love his music, even though it has changed a lot and I don't love it as much as I used to, but you know, I definitely think that he is my current problematic fave. He just says shit that is just like, Kanye, please.
Yeah.
It's like you're begging him to just stop talking.
Exactly.
When he started using his Twitter regularly, I'm like, this is not gonna end well. And it's like the famous video, I really did not enjoy that at all.
I didn't either.
Simply because it was like, to me, it was, I mean, I get art, whatever, hashtag art, but to me, it was just, it was dumb to me. Like, I get the, it was like a painting that he was inspired by.
And right.
All of his friends are like people in media that he felt needed to be in the video, but I just did not enjoy that video at all.
Yeah, it's like, again, it's like, I also didn't like it just because it was, for me personally, it just went to a place where I didn't feel like I needed to go. Like,
yeah.
But yeah, so I think Kanye, I wouldn't call him a fave of mine, but I definitely still listen to his albums and just disagree with a lot of things he says, but like his music goes, so you know, I'm still listening to it, but I feel like a lot of hip-hop in general is filled with problematic babes.
Oh, definitely. I mean, I'm waiting for this new Young Thug to drop, and I know he's gonna call me all types of bitches and hoes, but I can't wait to listen to it, you know what I mean?
Exactly. No, it's so true. Like, you in your daily life would probably don't want to be called those things.
Right.
It's difficult for me to separate their art from like what they do. And again, that's the kind of the crux of this issue. And I think it came up a lot recently with the whole Nate Parker situation.
Yeah.
And of course, also it was the same issue with Bill Cosby, where, you know, people just could not separate these men and what they did with supporting their projects.
Right.
And Nate Parker, in case you guys haven't heard, he produced, directed, and stars in a film called Birth of a Nation, which is all about Nat Turner, who led a slave rebellion in the 1800s. And it's a story that's like not told very often, like even in a lot of like classrooms. So everyone was really excited for this film because it was a chance for it to kind of get, you know, attention, and it was getting Oscar buzz even. And then Nate Parker, his own issues in his personal life with a rape case from when he was in college, it kind of resurfaced. And, you know, there's a lot of layers to the case itself, a lot of layers to the conversations that are happening about this on social media and on the internet as a whole. But a piece about this that really stood out to me was by Roxane Gay, who wrote an op-ed for the New York Times. And she wrote, "I cannot separate the art and the artist, just as I cannot separate my blackness and my continuing desire for more representation of the black experience in film, from my womanhood, my feminism, my own history of sexual violence, my humanity." So that really goes back to like just looking back at yourself.
Right.
And like trying to like understand or come to grips with why you find certain issues problematic, or why you are tolerating these things from a certain person and maybe not tolerating them from another. So, for example, with like Leon LaHavas, who's probably my current problematic fave, she tweeted something a couple months ago that was basically like saying like all lives matter type of vibe. Mm-hmm. And so I just remember going on my timeline and it was like, I was literally the Mr. Krabs meme because everyone was dragging Leon and I was like, what is happening? Shook, like that was the day when I truly realized that like all of our faves are problematic.
Most definitely. You're constantly questioning yourself like, well, should I be a fan of this person? You know, I really enjoy this person's music, but they're terrible. Mm-hmm. So should I even let people know that I still listen to this person's music? Like, outside of their music, I don't care for them at all. Mm-hmm. I don't follow them on anything. I don't pay attention to anything outside of listening to their music on iTunes. Mm-hmm. Am I wrong for doing that? You know right. what I mean? Even illegally downloading, say, Nate Parker's movie and watching it online instead of going seeing it in the movie. Am I wrong for doing that? Right. Even though I was excited to see it, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Because it is a story that we've been waiting for people to tell. So it's a constant conflict within yourself.
Right.
Like, should I support this person or not?
Yeah, and I still struggle with it. I don't know. And I feel like also the mainstream, like, audience in general, they kind of let certain people off and let certain people keep going. It's, like, yeah. odd. Like, you know, how Chris Brown, we mentioned, like, his issues, but he still had some pretty successful songs and features on songs in the last few years.
Yeah.
You know, like since the issue with Rihanna happened and everything that has happened since then.
Right.
He's had some songs on the radio. Like DJs, it's not like DJs were like, oh, we're never going to play Chris Brown again.
Right.
Like there were some initially who were doing that, but they definitely have seemed to stop.
Right.
Because I still hear Loyal on my radio like all the damn time.
Right.
You know?
But he definitely hasn't been blackballed at all.
Right.
You know?
But then you have, how do you even compare like bad deeds?
Right.
You know, like you... It's such a weird thing because like you have his situation, but then you have, you know, situations with like Bill Cosby where like all these networks were like pulling reruns of the Cosby Show.
Yeah.
And it's just like you obviously can't compare like what either of them did,
right.
but it's still interesting how, you know, what makes someone redeemable. I think that's really interesting. And I think it'll be interesting to see what comes out of the Nate Parker case as well. Mm-hmm. Within the next 3, 5, 10 years, like, will he be able to come back from this, you know?
Like, yeah, like, after Birth of the Nation is said and done, what comes next for him?
Mm-hmm. Again, like you said, it's a constant struggle you deal with as a fan of whether it's music, TV, film, and just... I think it just kind of comes back to the fact that everyone is human, and
right.
you can't put these people on a pedestal because... they're gonna do very terrible things sometimes, and
exactly.
you're gonna have to treat them like they're humans and understand that like they're gonna do terrible things, and sometimes they're gonna need to be accountable for those things, you know.
Exactly.
And if they're not choosing to be accountable, then maybe it's up to us to be like, hey, we're not gonna support your stuff because you have issues and we need to leave you behind, basically.
Right. You know, like, because at the end of the day, they're human just like us.
Right.
Let's talk Video Music Awards. This past Sunday, they aired on MTV, and there were a lot of things that went on. The VMAs are known for, like, you know, iconic moments and stuff like that, so... what are your thoughts on the VMAs?
Like you said, it's a very iconic award show. I mean, you have so many different pretty like big moments in pop culture that happened on the VMA stage in the last 30 years. It's something that has had like a real imprint on culture. I read this article actually in the New York Times that kind of summed up what the VMAs have meant to the generation of artists that kind of like owe their careers or like the jumpstart of their careers to MTV. So
yeah.
like even people like Beyonce, Kanye, they're the last generation of stars that owe that credit to MTV. And so it was a really interesting article that just kind of talked about how, like, newer artists of, like, this new generation, like, the VMAs and MTV in general does not mean as much to an artist who really got their jumpstart on social media.
Right.
Like, they don't have a TRL. They don't have MTV Diary or MTV Cribs. It's not even just like MTV not being as big of a player now. It's like music videos not being as much of a player as they used to.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Like it's been really interesting to think about just the different ways the VMAs have like evolved. And I think this year's show was really cool because I think it didn't really have like huge iconic moment as, you know, like the Britney Spears, Madonna kiss or whatever.
Right.
But like, I still feel like, you know, there were certain moments that just reminded me of VMAs of the past, really appreciating music and art and music videos.
Some artists, like their biggest performances have been at the VMAs, you know,
mm-hmm.
like Beyonce's performance Sunday was just, you know, amazing as
amazing.
Always.
Yeah.
And
I think even with Beyonce specifically, there's a reason why some of Beyonce's most intimate moments have happened on the VMA stage.
Right.
Like from her announcing her pregnancy and her baby bump in 2011 to, you know, when she was winning the Vanguard Award in 2014, like the fact that it was Jay-Z and Blue up there on stage presenting her with the award.
Yeah.
Like, and she was crying and it was like a super emotional, intimate moment. You know, and then this year, like, Blue walked with her on the red carpet. It's like there's a reason it's happening at the VMAs
right.
and not at other shows or other red carpets. It's because Beyonce, who's usually a very private person and artist who doesn't show up to a lot of shows that aren't the Grammys.
Right.
Like, she values MTV. She values the VMAs because it was such a huge part of her, you know, growth as an artist and even as a normal teen as she was growing up in Texas. So I think it's really interesting to see an artist's relationship with MTV and the VMAs, you know, an artist who kind of owes them a little bit
mm-hmm.
versus the newer artists that are kind of just here today, gone tomorrow, like, you know.
Yeah.
Chainsmokers and Halsey. No shade, but shade.
Right. I mean, it makes me think of, like, Britney. You know, she had her rise, fall, and I guess rise again.
She's had multiple comebacks on right. the VMAs.
So, you know, I think a lot of people were waiting for her to do something big this year. I mean, going after Beyonce, they set her up for failure
yeah.
with that. And I just think that she's not, I don't know. I don't feel like she's as connected with the music as she once was, you know, and she's been through a lot. So it's understandable. But I think that if she was anybody else, I don't know if we'd praise her like we do now. But yeah, I mean, I guess you can say she made a good enough comeback this year.
I don't know. I mean, it was really hard for me to watch personally her performance this year, especially like you said, like not only has she had a bunch of huge iconic moments on the VMA stage, but she herself has already won a Michael Jackson Video Vanguard Award.
Right.
And so, you know, everything from her holding that giant snake on stage
mm-hmm.
to when she performed Hit Me Baby One More Time and then the kiss with Madonna. Like, all these moments were huge for her. And so I feel like people will still praise her even if the performance wasn't good. Simply, it's pretty much like when a football player graduates high school. Like, he was a football star in high school
yeah.
and he graduates and kind of doesn't really turn into much. But, like, he was huge when he was in high school and such a star player.
Right.
You know he's not really shit now that he's graduated. But, like, when he does come back to campus, you gotta give him some respect.
He's a superstar.
Right. And so I feel like with Britney, it's like they're always going to invite her back, even if she's not on her A game. And then, of course, I do think, like you said, they kind of positioned the performances a little weird. She
mm-hmm.
definitely should have opened the show. You know, people are always going to love her, but, you know, we can't lie and say that it was like
amazing.
A stellar performance. Yeah.
Yeah. What else? Kanye's alleged 4 minutes. I think that was about 6 to 7 minutes of
it
him
was,
just talking.
If that was 4 minutes, that was a long 4 minutes.
But shout out to Teyana Taylor first and foremost. Like,
look.
She's fine as hell. I mean,
she is.
I follow her on Twitter, and I've liked her since the whole like Sweet 16, my Super Sweet 16
mm-hmm.
thing. But I think I was telling somebody that Kanye finally took her out of the good music dungeon because she's signed to Good Music, or was at least,
mm-hmm.
and he didn't really do much with her.
Right.
So it's nice to see him kind of like let her get her shine. I mean, yeah. It is with his music and stuff like that, but it definitely will push her forward for her next projects and stuff like that. So I definitely want
her. Her and her family are having like a stellar year.
Yes.
I mean, Iman Shumpert plays for the Cavs.
Yes. So they shout out to my team.
Look, I have no dog in that fight, so I'm not even going to. But no, like, it was cool. Like, they won, you know, NBA championships. They had a baby who's like adorable and who was also in the music video.
Yes.
You know, and now she finally gets like the shine she deserves. Huge, amazing moment, but also I was just like, all right, I need to maybe work out and right. put this Pop-Tart down.
Right, most definitely. I just had like hella green beans, so I'm trying to get this Teyana Taylor body popping. But yeah. But yeah.
We need to talk about, though, the queen of the night, Rihanna, because she was being honored with the Michael Jackson Video Vanguard Award. It's a very long name, but yes. It pretty much is like the VMA equivalent to, like, I don't want to call it a Lifetime Achievement Award, but basically it's like the highest honor of the VMAs.
Right. Because they don't have a Lifetime Achievement Award, do they?
Right, which is good that they don't have a Lifetime Achievement Award, because Rihanna is only 28.
Right.
So it's like she has a long way to go after this. And even the artists that won before her, like Justin Timberlake, Beyonce, Britney, like we mentioned, like, it's just really celebrating the impact that they've had on music so far.
Right, because none of them have peaked. Well, maybe Britney, but...
Maybe Britney, and I don't think any of them have peaked, because Beyonce even won the Vanguard Award in like 2014. So this is like pre-Lemonade.
Right, so, you know.
So it's just like...
Give it to her again next year for Lemonade.
Right, but what did you think? So they split her performances. Instead of doing like the traditional like one 20-minute long performance, they split her performances up into four.
I wish they wouldn't have done that.
Really? Tell me why.
I felt like everything after Beyonce, I didn't care about.
I feel that.
I really, like, and I do really love Rihanna. I love her album tracks just as much as I love her singles. But it just, I don't know, like, after Beyonce, like, how do you follow that? You know what I mean?
But and people were saying that about, like, all the performers.
Yeah, not just, not just Rihanna, but Britney. Was it, like, Halsey came after, too. Halsey and Chainsmokers, those people. It's just, like, all of those people after her is just, like, it was kind of pointless because I was still on Lemonade high. But, yeah, I really wish they wouldn't have split it up. But then we wouldn't have gotten those, like, great outfit changes that she had.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, I think with Rihanna, she has had so many singles, like so many successful singles.
And I mean, at any
given year, there are like 3 to 4 Rihanna singles that are on the radio, charting super high. And it's not a situation where, like Beyonce said in her documentary, like artists who release singles and like single after single and burn out and no one cares about the album. Right. Rihanna is like the complete opposite of that, where she releases single after single, but
she doesn't burn out.
Still remains on top, does not burn out. And so I feel like I liked the way they split it up, because since she had so many different songs and so many different, you know, the way they kind of divided it was like by genre almost, because she goes in and out of different genres from like pop to dancehall and her newer stuff and her older stuff. And so I just feel like I understood why they did what they did, but also I have been to a Rihanna concert and she gets through it. It's great. But also, like, there's also this thing about, will she have like the stamina to hold on to all of that for 20 minutes? Like, there's just so much ground to cover. So I'm glad they gave her that time in between to kind of do the outfit changes, have it be like 4 completely different moods. And, you know, I don't know, it was something interesting, but I didn't love it, but I understand why they did it and why this was the way they needed to do it for Rihanna.
Yeah. I mean, it still worked, though. My favorite one was the dance hall section.
Me too.
It was just...
I want to download that dance hall medley. Like,
that mix was so good. Like, the visuals were really good, just to see all those people on stage dancing and stuff like that. It was
my
really
friend,
cool.
My friend Jonquilin tweeted this, that, like, basically the dance hall portion was like the party that she's been wanting to go to all summer.
Yes.
And honestly, I felt the same way. Like, I mean, because we've been looking for this party together. Like, where is this the way the transitions were going from like rude boy to work to, there was a little bit of Pawn the Replay, yeah, but like they didn't really play it out. It just was like, that's Rihanna in her element. Mm-hmm. And it was just so beautiful to see. Like, you could even tell with Rihanna, like, how much she loved performing that part.
Yeah. And I mean, that do-rag though.
Like, the do-rag. The do-rag with the cape out.
Like, come on. For the culture. Like, definitely for the culture.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, I love that section, that segment of her performances.
We can't talk about Brianna's whole night without mentioning Drake.
I'll let you take that.
Yeah. So,
For Drake, those that don't know, I think Drake is a cornball. But, yeah, go ahead.
He is. He's an absolute cornball. But that's what I love the most about him. But no, so, you know, after all of Rihanna's performances, like, Drake was the one who actually presented her with the, you know, the award, like the physical award. And he came out in a tux.
Looking prom looking sharp.
Looking very sharp and a little too sharp for VMAs. Yes. Like, most people are wearing, like, a lot of the guys are wearing, like, jeans. It's a very chill award show, but yeah, he showed up looking like he was going to the Grammys or something. Yeah. And so when he first stepped out, everyone, like, I was just looking at my timeline and everyone was like, no, please don't propose. Please don't propose.
It felt like that.
Everyone
though
was convinced he was going to propose because he literally in the, you know, throughout the speech was like professing his love for Rihanna, which we all have known for like years.
Yeah.
But to me, I'm such an Aubrey shipper. Like, for those of you who don't know, that's A-U-B-R-I-H. Yeah, I just thought it was really beautiful, but you could tell, like, she was cheesing and, like, then sometimes was, like, rolling her eyes mm-hmm. and looking annoyed. But I think she was mostly annoyed at the fact that she just doesn't like major PDA that.
Yeah, PDA, yeah.
But we all know she's absolutely.
But, you know, Drake is, like, super extra, so it's, like, who
cares? He's very extra, and I agree that he's a cornball, but, like, he's the corniest man, like, in hip hop, I'm sure, but
he's the corniest
I don't know.
Man
I think
alive.
It's I think it's adorable.
Like, on the planet, he is the corniest.
But yeah, I thought that was like a really sweet moment.
Yeah, very nice.
I feel like you're not an Aubrey shipper.
I'm not at all.
I was like, there's an obvious like disconnect here.
I felt like the I went out on my timeline.
Aww.
I've been feeling like the I went out on my timeline for the last few days because it hasn't stopped yet.
But yeah, I don't know, it will not stop.
Like our friend Autumn said, it just there's something about it that just doesn't feel right. And I was telling her that it's like trying to fit a puzzle piece into a spot that doesn't fit for me. That's how it feels. Like, I don't know why. It's just weird. Like, I like them separately, but together it's just like, it's so strange. It's so strange.
Okay, so basically now my mission is to convert you and Autumn.
Please don't. Please don't.
To being Aubrey shippers. Please. Like, I'm noting that right now.
But yeah.
Okay, we got to talk about the Beyonce.
Yeah, but first of all, I did want to say that the VMAs were like hella black this year. Like,
so black.
They were so black. I mean, we got Future, we got Rihanna, we got Beyonce, we got DJ Khaled, like, semi-hosting.
It was amazing. And then even like Rihanna in her acceptance speech of the award, she thanked her fans,
right.
But she thanked Barbados, her country. She thanked women, but she specifically thanked black women.
Right.
You know, and it was just like, it was beautiful. Like, it was, I just remember like between that moment and then Beyonce, like all I could think of during Beyonce's whole set was like, I just love being a black girl. Thank God I'm a black girl. It felt like it was for me, for us. And you just can't top that.
Yeah.
You can't top that feeling.
Oh, one of my favorite moments from the night was the final five. Well, minus one, Gabby was homesick, but presenting to Beyonce. They're just having the best year ever.
They're adorable.
They're having the best year ever.
Yeah, Lori Hernandez's face when Beyonce
so
came
precious.
Up was just
she is so precious. She's like
adorable.
A baby doll. She is
she
so
is.
Cute.
She's
but
adorable.
My grandmother called me when Beyonce was on. She's like, do you see Beyonce? And I'm like, yes, I'm watching
yes.
it. Trust me. I'll
yes,
call
grandma.
You back because you're interrupting me.
But no, I want to hear all your thoughts on Beyonce's part. I want to call
just,
it like a whole set because she
performed yeah, I mean,
like,
you know,
half the damn album.
And I'm not mad at all. But, you know, first of all, I turned my TV up all the way. I might have bust like one of my speakers.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd think that I wouldn't be as hyped because I've seen it live already.
Right.
But it was different. Like, she changed it a bit. She changed some of the choreography. Like, mm-hmm. you know, we've talked about before, she never gives you the exact same show twice.
Right.
You know, mm-hmm. I felt like I was just so overwhelmed. I was telling somebody that I literally had to, like, change my shirt because I was in my house sweating because I was just jumping around and dancing and stuff like that. And you would, it's like, I'm so happy that I was in my house by myself and my roommate mm-hmm. wasn't home, because she would have been looking at me like I was crazy. But yeah, I mean, it was just like, I don't know how to describe her performances other than it was just amazing. You know,
it's like a spiritual, religious experience. Yes. It's like something that you can't really describe. I just don't have the words for it.
Yeah,
like, you just have to experience it yourself, and other people who get it will get it. If you don't, like, we just don't want to hear from you.
Yeah,
like,
I'm sorry that you don't. Like,
that's
I really,
how it goes. But I was really happy because, I mean, she's Beyonce's Beyonce, so of course she can do whatever the hell she wants to do. But because she's not like Rihanna, who's getting the biggest award of the night, she didn't have to perform as many songs as she performed.
Didn't.
You know, she could have performed two or three and, like, you know, you kind of move on. Even that, though, is a lot.
Right.
Considering, you know. So I was mainly really, really happy for, like, people who didn't get a chance to see her on tour
mm-hmm.
to, like, be able to get that experience. Because I don't even know if Formation is going to be released, like, if there's going to be a tour DVD or whatever.
Yeah.
So, like, I'm glad people will get that out of this performance. You know, just like even like a taste of what it would be like live. And even better, it's like not the same as what we saw live. So like they get something that's even more special. I think my favorite part was the kind of mashup she did between Hold Up and Countdown.
Yeah, I was just about to say that.
Babe, it's such a shame you let this good love go to waste. I always keep the top tier, 5-star, Betsy loving in the car. Make that wood, make that wood.
I
was
lost
waiting for
it,
her to
and
do
I have
it.
Watched that video multiple times since, and I just like it's just the perfect two songs to mash up.
Yeah,
and
everybody goes like, wild for it. Like everybody lives for that part.
Yeah,
everybody lives for that part. I was mm-hmm. tweeting. I'm like, I hope she does it. I hope she does it. And then like when she did it, everybody on my time was like, yeah, she did it. And I'm just like,
it's so perfect. It's so perfect.
Yes.
Yeah, that was great. And then she like
when she broke the camera, that was another one of my favorite moments because it's like, you know, and then all the memes that came from that, like Beyonce. Mm-hmm. Told MTV she's just gonna come and break their like $1,000 camera and you're just
said,
gonna
yes,
be okay
please,
with it.
Please come, please do that. Please, we want you to do that.
Please come.
But yeah, it was a really, really good show, I think. Mm-hmm. Compared to like certain previous years, like there weren't really many, for example, like when Kanye interrupted Taylor Swift's speech or whatever, like these dramatic what the fuck just happened moments. But it was fine. Like it didn't really need that. I just had moments throughout the show where I was just very satisfied by mm-hmm. the performances, by the fact that like the VMAs are becoming like almost not really an award show.
Yeah,
like
because it felt like a
more,
concert. That was
yeah,
cool,
it's like
though.
A giant concert. And what matters more is the performances, the moments you're experiencing, and the interactions between your favorite artists. And I think they only gave out like 3 awards on air.
Yeah.
Like there's a whole slew of awards that they have and nominations that they have. But I like that they focus more on the experience of just kind of watching your favorite artists do their thing.
I totally forgot about Ariana Grande and Nicki Minaj.
What do you think about that?
Okay, so first of all, I really do like that song a lot.
I did not like it at first, but I've grown to like it.
Yeah, and it was actually a song that I skipped on the album when I first listened to it, but I saw somebody tweet Nicki Minaj's lyrics from her verse when she's like wrist icicle ride dick bicycles.
Oh, yeah.
And that's like the funniest shit ever, so like that made me go listen to it. And I really like the song, but I kind of want to give a shout out to Ariana Grande because she was legit riding a bike. She was like doing Soul Cycle while performing.
Yep. And the vocals were still on point.
Yeah, I mean, she had a few like windy moments, but I mean, you know, that's expected when you just got off of a stationary bike. Right. You know, I didn't think Nicki Minaj gave us that much energy. She didn't. It looked like she kind of would rather be anywhere else.
The energy just wasn't there. I don't know what it was, but I definitely was expecting more. But I think, you know, what we got from Ariana was just very, very impressive, even though I'm currently still very sore from my first SoulCycle experience, so it was kind of traumatizing to see that. But I think she definitely deserves, like, all the props, because there were artists that performed that night that were either lip-syncing or, like, they weren't lip-syncing and they were not on a SoulCycle bike and singing, and they still sounded like they were, you know, running a marathon.
Yeah. Shout out to Ariana.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so that was pretty much everything from the VMAs that I could remember.
Yeah, I think I'm excited for next year. Mm-hmm. They really brought out all the big names this year. I don't know how they're going to top it next year. I kind of have a feeling that either Taylor Swift or Adele are going to get the Video Vanguard Award next year. Mm-hmm. But we'll see.
I thoroughly enjoyed it. It might have been because Taylor Swift wasn't there as well.
Yeah, she was at jury duty.
Jury duty on a Sunday.
Like, okay, I honestly didn't know you could have jury duty on a Sunday, but
you know,
it's fine.
Whatever you say.
That's how bad I am at being an adult, but it's cool. I think it was so good that she wasn't there, because people are feeling certain ways about her. And also, like, it would have tempted MTV to do something related to the whole Famous debacle. Yeah. And then also it would have tempted Kanye to, like, point her out like he pointed out Amber.
Yeah.
And I just, like, I'm so, like, exhausted by that whole storyline that I'm glad she wasn't there to kind of encourage any mention of it.
Yeah, let it die. Yeah. But, yeah, the VMAs were good overall. Yeah. I liked it.
I give it a 9 out of 10.
I give it an 8. No, you know what? I'll give it a 7, and I'll say why I'll give it a 7 later when I get to my flops.
Okay, cool. Well, let's move into that then.
Okay. So you want to go first with your faves and flops this week?
Okay. So my fave and flop actually also both have to do with the VMAs. Mm-hmm. So we touched on this a little bit, but I got to give her a shout out again. Like, my fave this week is hands down Teyana Taylor. Mm-hmm. Like, so, so happy for her. She killed it in that music video for Fade. And I love simple. It was like a simple music video, but in a way that it just gives you everything you need and it's not super flashy. Mm-hmm. It was just perfect to me. And I also respect Kanye for taking himself out of it.
Yeah.
Because I feel like he's been really pushing this thing where he wants to be, you know, the most iconic thing, or like he wants to push boundaries. He wants to make statements like he did with the Famous video, or like tried to do with the Famous video. But I feel like in my eyes, like, I appreciate the kind of art that he gave us in the Fade video mm-hmm. more than I appreciate the kind of quote unquote art that he was trying to present with Famous.
Yeah.
And, you know, it just, to me, like, I just love it. I love seeing a dancer just do their thing. Mm-hmm. Like, that to me is beautiful. So I just, so much respect and love for Teyana Taylor. So that was my fave. My flop of the week is related. It goes to all of these publications who decided to write these articles that were basically like, meet Teyana Taylor, you know, or like, here's, you know, introducing Teyana Taylor kind of thing. Like, there was even one that, like, called her a video vixen.
Yeah, I saw that.
And I was just like, you know, you guys, we'll link this in the description, but Ira Madison III, who is a writer for MTV, and he also co-hosts the MTV Speed Dial podcast, he wrote a great article about this, basically breaking down this whole issue. But just a lot of these publications that are predominantly white and mm-hmm. also just very out of touch, the same publications that are writing about, like, Bantu knots and calling them mini buns or something, you know. And so it just, we have known who Teyana Taylor is for years. It's not introducing, this is a huge moment for her,
right,
but, like, it's, you know, we've known who she was. She actually got her start on MTV with the Sweet 16.
Exactly. That's so it's the crazy, like, thing. Like,
yeah, so
now.
That definitely is my flop, because, like, just do your research, hire some black writers, like, please stop being so lazy.
Do
so
better.
Yeah, that's my fave and flop. What were yours?
Okay, so my fave is Blonde, Frank Ocean's album. So good. So. I mean, like, it's just so good. Like, I actually did not expect it to be as good. as it is. I don't know if I'd put it above Nostalgia Ultra or Channel Orange, but it's still a really, really, really good album. And I enjoy it so much. When I heard Jasmine Sullivan on Godspeed, I knew that I would not stop listening to it for months. You know what I mean? Like, my standout tracks are Godspeed, like I said, Nights. That it gives me that Pyramids feel where it has two parts to the song and it has a really cool breakdown. And what's the other one? Self-Control. Those are my like three standout tracks. I really love those so much. I just like I commend Frank for getting the album out without like completely writing him off. You know, the hype was so, I think he did live up to the hype, you know. Some people might not think that, but I really do think he lived up to the hype. The album is really, really good, and I enjoy it a lot. I haven't stopped listening to it since it dropped.
Can I just say that, like, Pink and White featuring Beyonce?
Oh, yeah.
I honestly think that that is what God is playing when people enter the gates of heaven.
And like, it's like, you want, and it's like, you hear her in the background, it's like, damn, I wish she could just, like, I wish she had an actual, like, line in the song.
But either way, it sounds amazing. She did, like, I am thoroughly satisfied with her just breathing on right, that track, right. Basically.
Because it's a smooth, like 10
how
seconds.
Harmonious her breathing is. Like, it's insane. And just, like, you know, paired with his vocals. And, yeah, I just want to get rebaptized to the sounds of that song.
Yeah, I mean, I really want them to keep working with each other. I enjoy the work that comes from them too, collaborating. But yeah, so Blonde is definitely my fave. Yeah, so go listen to it if you haven't. If you haven't, I don't know what the hell you're doing with yourself.
I know, like, seriously.
But my flop, I'm like super annoyed with the VMAs because I felt like they spent so much time with Key and Peele and all of these other like comedians, quote unquote, I guess. Every time they show Key and Peele on the VMAs, I'm like, I really wish they would just not show them ever again. And what did they do? 5 minutes later, they show them again. It fell flat. It fell so flat. And I mean, that's what like made me give the show a 7 out of 10, because every time they came on the screen, which was too much, like every time they show them, I'm like, oh my God, like I want to turn my TV off. Right. And I'm probably being super dramatic, but it really like annoyed me.
No,
that
I'm like
they
constantly showed them. Gauging by my timeline, like there were so many other people who felt the same way.
Yeah, and I wish award shows would just have celebrities come out and announce, you know, certain things and present awards, and that just be it. Like, do we really need hosts at this point? Like, do we need these corny jokes? I mean, like, if you have like a Tracee Ellis Ross and an Anthony Anderson type thing where they're actually funny and they have chemistry, yeah. But so much of it just comes off as like super awkward and corny, and mm-hmm. It makes me like uncomfortable. Like, I get secondhand embarrassment so bad, and like, yeah. I was cringing the whole time. Like, Jay Farrell, we have heard these, you know, impersonations a million times. Like, how many times am I going to hear you do Jay-Z? Like,
the
Jay-Z
one, that was so awkward and not funny at all.
It was too long. Like, I think what bothered me more than the fact that these things were not funny is that all of the jokes were too long. Like, even if they were funny, they died out before they finished the joke. And it was just like, oh my God, shut up. I just was not amused at all. So my flop is just award shows that keep trying to make us laugh when it's not funny. Stop right. it, please. Right. I'm begging.
Please fix it. Thanks so much for listening again, you guys. Before we go, of course, we got to give a shout out to our amazing DJ, DJ Magic. She produces the amazing music that you hear going in and out of every episode. You can follow her on Twitter and SoundCloud at your girl DJ Magic. You can find all her links in our description box.
And you can follow us on Twitter at The Fan Podcast. And you can follow our personal accounts. That'll all be in the description box for you to see. Yeah. And yeah, thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening. Let us know your thoughts. Rate us on iTunes because we want to know if you guys like us or not.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, thank y'all.
Thank you.